the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, let's get it started with some baseball talk because the trade deadline was actually pretty crazy this year. It varies every single year. Sometimes nothing will go on at the trade deadline or a couple trades will go on. But this year we had an insane trade deadline and we had so much go on that I really couldn't even keep up with it. But let's start off with the biggest deal of the week. And that ended up being Juan Soto. He was finally traded from the Washington Nationals. And he was actually traded to the San Diego Padres. Him and Josh Bell were both traded to the San Diego Padres. And this was basically where Soto was rumored to go, basically from the start of these trade rumors. So good for San Diego. I mean, this is a big deal just because, they still have Fernando Tatis. He's been their big superstar player for the last couple of seasons. He hasn't played at all this year just because he did break his wrist earlier, right before the season started. And so he hasn't played at all, but he's expected to be returning probably within the month. And so he's already a great player. Then you've got Manny Machado, who started this season off really hot. Then he got injured, and he's been very consistent, though. He's fallen off just a bit, but he's still playing great baseball so far. And then so you're going to add in Juan Soto and Josh Bell as well. I mean, both him and Josh Bell. Josh Bell is obviously not on the status of Soto, but hey, he's still a great player, and he's definitely going to help the Padres hopefully make a playoff run. I mean, I don't think they're going to win their division just because they're so far behind the Dodgers at this point in time. But this could be a big deal come playoff time and going into next year as well. So this is a great move by the Padres. The Nationals ended up getting mostly a bunch of prospects for Soto. So we don't know how any of that aspect of the trade is going to pan out, but that was a great move by the Padres and good for Soto. So now he's finally moved on from the Nationals, and we'll see what happens with the rest of his career. Then also at the trade deadline, Noah Syndergaard, he was traded from the Angels to the Phillies. And I think this is a great move by the Phillies just because, they're already a team that's been starting to get hot, especially the last month. And so they're going to be wanting to make a nice little playoff run. And this kind of shores up their starting pitching, which is pretty good. Their starting pitching isn't the best in the league, but this definitely gives them some depth. Then Whit Merrifield, he was traded from the Kansas City Royals to the Toronto Blue Jays. And I think this is a huge move for the Blue Jays just because they're that team. They're also kind of similar to the Phillies where, the Padres, where they're definitely not going to win their division. But they've got a good shot at a playoff run. And so Whit Merrifield, he just kind of makes their offense just a little bit better. And then the last kind of big trade ended up being Tyler Mahle. The starting pitcher of the Cincinnati Reds, he was traded to the Minnesota Twins. And this just gives the Twins a little bit more depth at the starting pitching position as well. And then what else happened in baseball this week? We had on Tuesday, Spencer Strider, the rookie starting pitcher of the Atlanta Braves, he actually broke an Atlanta rookie record for the most strikeouts in a game this season. He broke his own record because he had 12 strikeouts earlier in the season. I want to say actually it was a couple weeks ago when he had the 12 strikeouts. And now he struck out 13 in Tuesday's game. So he just continues to have an amazing season and add to this great starting pitching from the Atlanta Braves. Then Jacob deGrom, he finally made his debut with the Mets this season, and it was solid. It unfortunately ended up being a loss for the Mets, but overall he went, I believe, 6-7 innings strong, And basically, the Mets didn't fall apart until DeGrom was removed from the game. So DeGrom, he's back. He's been gone for, what, like a year and a half now? So that was a great start for DeGrom. And perfect timing as well for the Mets, because the Mets have been very solid this year. They've been definitely one of the top teams in the NL. And so this definitely bolsters their starting pitching and should give them some depth, especially come playoff time. And then unfortunately on Tuesday night, the legendary sports announcer Vin Scully, he died at the age of 94. He spent 67 years of his life announcing games. He's mostly known for Los Angeles Dodgers games, but you know, he's announced some Super Bowls, some World Series, and he just had a 67 year long career, so he's had multiple accomplishments. But if you're a fan of baseball, you know exactly who Vin Scully is, and he passed away at the age of 94 on Tuesday night. Then on Wednesday, Trey Mancini made his debut for the Houston Astros, and he walked right up in his first start and hit a home run. So he made a great debut for the Astros. Then also on Wednesday night, Sandy Alcantara, the starting pitcher of the Florida Marlins, he had his third career shutout against the Philadelphia Phillies. They won 3-0, and he's just been pitching his lights out this season. And I don't think a lot of people are talking about him just because, you know, he's in Florida. He's playing for the Marlins, and they're an okay team this year. He's definitely been the shining star of their team, but he's been having one hell of a season. Definitely a front runner for the NL Cy Young this year. And then last night, Justin Verlander, he won his 7th straight start. He leads the league still in wins this year with 15 wins and a low ERA of 1.73. So he's just, you know, he's actually having one of the best seasons he's ever had in his entire career. And that says a lot, because Justin Verlander has had one of the most amazing careers, definitely a Hall of Fame worthy career, and he's not even done yet. But he's been having a phenomenal season, and you never know what's going to happen with pitchers when they're coming off of Tommy John surgeries. But Justin Verlander, he is back in tip-top form, and speaking of Cy Young, this guy is probably the front runner for the AL Cy Young this year. And then also last night, the Los Angeles Angels, man, they just keep getting more and more pathetic this year. Shohei Ohtani, he had 2 home runs yesterday. And then overall, as a team, the Los Angeles Angels ended up having 7 home runs in the game last night, but they still ended up losing. So this team is just getting more and more pathetic. And it's very sad, because you have 2 of the top guys in the league on your team with Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, and the Angels just can't seem to get it going. So who the hell knows what's going to go on with this team, but it's very pathetic, and it's very sad that 2 of the best players in the league don't even get to showcase their skills on a halfway decent team. And then also, you know, Aaron Judge, he continues his reign of terror. He's got 43 home runs this year, which is 10 ahead of the second place home run guy, and that would be Kyle Schwarber with 33. So Aaron Judge, he continues to rake, and he also leads the league in RBIs with 93 RBIs. He took over the lead from Pete Alonso, who isn't too far behind. But still, man, Aaron Judge is just making a huge case for MVP this season. His batting average is a .298, so that's not bad either. And then, of course, his team, the Yankees, they are the first team in the AL to 70 wins. And then they're trailing the Dodgers now, who have 72 wins on the season. And they're the only 2 teams so far in baseball to eclipse the 70-win mark. So that's where we're at in baseball. Then we had a little bit going on in football this week. The Dolphins, they have been under investigation for the last couple of months for tampering charges. And we found out that those tampering charges were against when Tom Brady, in his last season with the New England Patriots in 2019, they apparently were reaching out to him prior to the time frame they're allowed to reach out to him. And they tried reaching out to him then. And then obviously we found out that they tried reaching out to him last year as well. And then Sean Payton, the coach of the New Orleans Saints, last year they tried getting, they apparently tampered with him as well while he was still a member of the Saints, and they didn't give the Saints any warning or tried to get any permission to interview Sean Payton. And so the owner, Stephen Ross, he's actually been suspended through October 17th. So he's not allowed to go to any of the games. He's not allowed to show up to any of the practices of the Dolphins until October 17th. He also is not allowed to attend any of the owner's meetings until next year, until 2023. And he's also been fined $1.5 million. And they lost a first-round pick in this 2023 draft, and then a third-round pick in the 2024 draft. And this is not including what's going to happen with, of course, the Brian Flores trial and him suing the Dolphins. This is completely separate. But, you know, the Dolphins, they just continue to be a shit show, and it's not getting better for them, at least behind the scenes with the owner or anything. But they have come down heavy on the Dolphins for their tampering that went on over the last couple of seasons. Then also, the I mentioned that Deshaun Watson, the judge finally ruled on his suspension, and she ruled that she believes that he should serve a 6-game suspension. And on Monday's show, we didn't know if the NFL was going to appeal. It looked like they were going to, but no announcement had been made. And then officially, they have announced yesterday that they will appeal the Deshaun Watson suspension. They're actually trying to go with an indefinite suspension, and they would like him to be gone at least for this season, and they're looking for a more hefty fine, which I don't have a problem with. I hope they win this appeal, but I mean, you just really don't know what's going to happen. But that's what the NFL is looking for. So the Deshaun Watson thing still continues to drag on, and who knows how much longer it's going to go on. But the NFL is appealing the suspension decision, and they won at least a year. And so we'll see what happens with the NFLPA. They've said that they're going to fight it, and I imagine they're going to fight it because they usually do, because that is their job. And then also, just in some training camp news, the defending Super Bowl champions, that would be the Los Angeles Rams, their starting quarterback, Matthew Stafford, he's having some elbow issues. It was announced a couple months ago that he ended up having some, like a little cleanup surgery in his elbow because he's got some tendonitis. And, you know, he's apparently going to be on a pitch count with throwing, during training camp. And, you know, he's been battling through some tendonitis, and that's really not a good thing, and that you want to go into with the season. Now, it's from what Matthew Stafford has had to say, he's going to play through it, but you don't know if this is going to end up being a lingering issue, and this is on his throwing arm, so this is a big deal for the defending Super Bowl champions, because Matthew Stafford, he's obviously the reason why they were finally able to go over the edge and finally get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl last year. He was a huge part of it. So if he ends up having some elbow issues, we'll see what happens with the Rams season. Now, so far, like I said, it hasn't shown that it's a big deal, but we'll see what happens. I doubt he's going to end up playing in any preseason games, because the Rams have, since Sean McVay took over as coach, they've basically made it clear that our starters don't play preseason games. So I don't expect to see Matthew Stafford play in any of the preseason games. And who knows if this is going to affect him throughout the season, but we won't know until the season begins. And we still have about a month to go. So we'll see what happens there with Matthew Stafford. But that's pretty alarming when you have an elbow injury on your throwing arm. And then also, ESPN did something interesting this week, where they actually ranked every GOAT at every position in football. And I was going through it, and I actually got to agree with the majority of their GOATs, and I decided I'm going to go ahead and do my own kind of greatest of all time by each position. And so today we're going to do defense, and then on Monday I'm going to do offense. And I'm going to compare basically my picks with ESPN's picks, and just give a little rundown on who I think is the greatest of all time at each position in the NFL. So, like I said, we're going to start with defense, and we're going to begin with edge rusher. And edge rusher can either be defensive end or outside linebacker. And so ESPN, they went with Lawrence Taylor as the greatest edge rusher of all time. And gotta say, I agree with them, just because Lawrence Taylor, he really did revolutionize the edge rusher position, and he really was a difference maker for the Giants, starting with the day he was drafted. And so his career, he was a New York Giant from 1981 to 1993. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1999. He had 10 Pro Bowl selections. His career stats are 184 games with 142 sacks and 9 interceptions. Just a random stat to know about Lawrence Taylor is that he had 132.5 official sacks in his career. His 9.5 in 1981 were unofficial, and more than half of them, 76, came in a 5-season span from 1985 to 1989. He had at least 12 sacks in each of those 5 seasons, the longest streak by any player since individual sacks became official in 1982. You know, he had one of the most impressive careers. He also won Super Bowls as well. And, you know, this was a very difficult decision because there are quite a few amazing edge rushers throughout the history of the league. And it would be noted as a runner-up at this position would definitely be Reggie White. It was difficult to pick Lawrence Taylor over Reggie White, but I think Lawrence Taylor's dominance – and, you know, he does have one more Super Bowl ring, so that matters to me for sure. But, you know, Lawrence Taylor, he revolutionized that position. And while Reggie White, he also was a revolutionary player, one of the greatest of all time, I still put Lawrence Taylor above Reggie White, and so did ESPN as well. Then at defensive tackle, ESPN voted Aaron Donald as the GOAT. And I got to say, I agree with them. His career so far has been with the St. Louis LA Rams from 2014 up until this season still. He's had 8 Pro Bowl selections. His career stats so far are 127 games, 98 sacks, 440 tackles, and 23 forced fumbles. Of course, he can keep adding to that because he still is going to be playing this year. Who knows how much longer Aaron Donald has left in his tank, but he's definitely going to be playing this year. I kind of feel like he's got another 3 to 5 years in him, so he's going to be adding to that. Donald has recorded at least 8 sacks in each of his 8 seasons, and he's the only defensive tackle in NFL history to record 20 sacks in a season, which was 20.5 in 2018. And he's just been one of the most dominating defensive tackles every single year since he was drafted into the league. A runner-up at defensive tackle that deserves mentioning is definitely Mean Joe Green of the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 1970s. But, you know, Aaron Donald, he's just been consistently dominant every single year that he's been in the league. He's been dominant even when the Rams were not a good team, which was the majority of the beginning of his career. They actually haven't been good up until these last couple of seasons of his career. And Aaron Donald's still just been dominant. And it's really difficult to actually look throughout the history of the league and say that there's a better defensive tackle than Aaron Donald. And like I said, he can still add to all of these stats that he already has, these stellar statistics in his career. And he also just won his first Super Bowl this past season. Then at linebacker, ESPN voted Ray Lewis as their GOAT at linebacker. And it's really difficult to argue with them on that just because Ray Lewis is definitely by far one of the greatest linebackers in the history of the league. He has 2 Super Bowls, which was really difficult for me, but I personally can't put anybody above Dick Butkus. Now, Dick Butkus, he did not win a Super Bowl, so that's really where Ray Lewis has him beat. You know, there would be no Ray Lewis if it wasn't for Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus, he was one of the scariest NFL players ever, and so was Ray Lewis. But Dick Butkus, man, he was a killer. His career, he was a Chicago Bear from 1965 to 1973. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1979, 8 Pro Bowl selections. His career stats, he played 119 games with 1,020 tackles, 78.5 sacks, 22 interceptions, 27 fumble recoveries, which was an NFL record at the time of his retirement. And he was a 2-time Defensive Player of the Year. My runner-up definitely is Ray Lewis, but I feel like Dick Butkus, he was way, just like I said, there would be no Ray Lewis if it wasn't for Dick Butkus. And in my opinion, he's the all-time GOAT at the linebacker position over Ray Lewis, with Ray Lewis at a very, very close second place for me. Then at cornerback, ESPN had Deion Sanders as their GOAT, and I also agree with them on this. I've mentioned it many times before, my love for Deion Sanders on this show. I think he's one of the greatest football players of all time, but if you never got to witness Deion Sanders, I feel bad for you just because he was such an amazing player. He was a 3-tool player. He didn't just play cornerback. He played wide receiver and kick returner as well. His career, he played for the Atlanta Falcons from 1989 to 1993. He played for the 49ers in 1994, then the Dallas Cowboys from 1995 to 1999, then the Washington Redskins in 2000, and the Baltimore Ravens in 2004 to 2005. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2011. He is selected to eight Pro Bowls, and he played in 188 games with 53 interceptions. You know, he was one of the, like I said, one of the most versatile players, in football history, straight up. He was one of two players in NFL history to score a touchdown in 6 different ways. He scored touchdowns, 9 times through interceptions, 6 times on punt returns, 3 times on kick returns, 3 times at wide receiver, and 1 fumble recovery, and he's also rushed for 1 touchdown. So that in and of itself is just an amazing feat. And the other time that happened was 1966 Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee Bill Dudley. And no other cornerback has racked up more interception return yards than Deion Sanders, who collected 1,132 return yards in his career. I don't think any cornerback in the history of football even comes close to him. The only one that I felt was a good runner-up would be Charles Woodson, who played with the Oakland Raiders and the Green Bay Packers and won a Super Bowl with the Packers. But I don't think even Charles Woodson could touch what Deion Sanders did. Not just a cornerback, but like I said, I mean, he scored touchdowns in 6 different ways. That's absolutely insane. Deion Sanders is also a 2-time Super Bowl champion. He won with the 49ers and the Cowboys 2 consecutive years. And he was definitely a difference maker when he stepped onto the field, whether it was defensively, offensively, or on special teams. But on defense, if you're familiar with Darrell Revis, who played for the Jets for the majority of his career and then moved on to the Patriots, and now he's retired. He was also an amazing cornerback, but they used to call it Revis Island, and that you can't get on Revis Island because or you can't get off of Revis Island because he locks down every receiver he's against. And really, I think Deion Sanders invented that, and you can't come to Deion Sanders Island. That's for damn sure. But Deion Sanders, one of the greatest of all times, but definitely the greatest cornerback of all time. And then rounding out the greatest defensive players at safety, ESPN voted Ronnie Lott as their all-time great at safety, and I gotta say, I 100% agree with them on that. Ronnie Lott was a game changer. He was basically, to me, the same type of player that Deion Sanders was, where he just made a huge difference on the field. He invented the launching at a player and just annihilating a receiver while he was in the air. Obviously, you can't do that anymore, but Ronnie Lott was one of the craziest players on the field when he played. He played for the San Francisco 49ers from 1981 to 1990, the Los Angeles Raiders from 1991 to 1992, and then the New York Jets from 1993 to 1994. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2000. He was selected to 10 Pro Bowls. His career stats are 192 games, 63 interceptions, and 8.5 sacks. He was one of two defensive players, along with Mean Joe Green, with 4 Super Bowl championships and 10 Pro Bowls, and he compiled 5 seasons of at least 100 tackles. So Ronnie Lott, one of the greatest of all time. Although it was really difficult for me to put Ronnie Lott above Ed Reed, because Ed Reed is, he's my runner-up at the safety position, and he is, I fully enjoyed Ed Reed's career. I loved Ed Reed's career. He was just such a ball hawk and just one of the greatest defenders you will ever see play defense, but I could not put him above Ronnie Lott. Ronnie Lott was a killer on defense. So those are my all-time goats at each position on defense, and I will do each position on offense on Monday's episode. All right, and so since training camp's going on right now, I'm still kind of working through my predictions on what I think this is going to happen during this season. You know, there's hasn't been too many times throughout this history of the league where we've had a repeat champion. And so this year, that would be the Rams. If the Rams end up repeating that or end up going back to the Super Bowl, they would be the first repeat champion since the New England Patriots did it in the early 2000s. We've only had repeat champions 8 times in the history of the league, and only once has it been done twice by a team, and that was the Pittsburgh Steelers, who have done it twice. So it's very rare when it happens. And so I decided today's Trop 5 is going to be the Trop 5 repeat Super Bowl champions, starting with number 5, and that would be the 1966-1967 Green Bay Packers. They started this gangsta shit, and this is the motherfucking thanks they get. They repeated in Super Bowl I and Super Bowl II. This was Vince Lombardi. He was the coach. You know, you had Bart Starr at quarterback. You had Horning at running back. I mean, really, basically every player for this Green Bay Packers team is in the Hall of Fame. One of the most legendary teams of all time. These Super Bowls they actually won. This was actually before they even referred to it as a Super Bowl. It was just the AFL-NFL championship. And so in Super Bowl I, the Packers ended up beating the Kansas City Chiefs 35-10. Bart Starr was the MVP. He went 16 for 23 for 250 yards and 2 touchdowns. Then Super Bowl II, they came right back and they beat the Oakland Raiders 33-14. And the MVP was once again Bart Starr. He went 13 for 24 with 202 yards and a touchdown. And this was actually really the end of this this dynastic team, because even before these two Super Bowls, they actually won a total of 5 championships. They had won 3 before these two. And I mean, that's why it's called the Lombardi Trophy, because Vince Lombardi, he is the most legendary coach of all time. He started this shit. And so this is one of one of the greatest teams of all time. And I decided to put them at number 5. Then at number 4 on my top 5 repeat Super Bowl champions, I have the 1988-1989 San Francisco 49ers. This team had Bill Walsh as their coach, Joe Montana as their quarterback, Jerry Rice, John Taylor, Ronnie Lott, and just an endless amount of amazing players. This 49ers team actually would end up winning 4 Super Bowls. These were the last two of this dynasty's Super Bowl run. The first of these two back-to-back Super Bowls was Super Bowl 23 versus the Cincinnati Bengals. The 49ers would win 20-16. This was a huge comeback from the 49ers. Once again, Joe Montana drove them down the field. And they would end up winning. The MVP would be Jerry Rice with 11 catches, 215 yards, and a touchdown. And then they would come back in Super Bowl 24 versus the Denver Broncos, and they would absolutely annihilate the Broncos, 55-10. MVP was Joe Montana, who went 22 for 29, threw 297 yards, and fought a record 5 touchdowns in the Super Bowl. So, I actually almost put this 49ers team at number five behind the Packers, just because if you actually look at the breakdown of this dynasty, they had like 3-4 years in between these two Super Bowls from their last two Super Bowls. So I don't think this team was as dominating as the Green Bay Packers and also as these three teams ahead of them. But the reason why I put the Packers behind them is not only because they started it, but because the competition and the teams that they played weren't quite as good as what the 49ers were playing against. So I went ahead and put the 49ers at number four. But I think you could really alternate them with the Packers, at least in my opinion. Then at number three on my top five repeat Super Bowl champions, I have the 2003-2004 New England Patriots, the last team to actually repeat in the Super Bowl. The first of these two was Super Bowl 38 versus the Carolina Panthers, in which the New England Patriots would win 32-29, actually a very crazy competitive second half for sure. The first half was kind of slow, but the second half, it was back and forth between the two teams, and you really couldn't tell who was going to win, and the Patriots won in crazy fashion, of course. Tom Brady would end up being the MVP with 32. He would complete 32 of 48 passes for 354 yards and three touchdowns. Then in Super Bowl 39, they would face off against the Philadelphia Eagles, in which they would win 24-21, and the MVP was Deion Branch, wide receiver, with 11 catches and 133 yards. I think he was really just the MVP because he made some big key plays, especially on that the last drive for them to get the win. And but this New England Patriots team that actually would end up winning three out of four Super Bowls, and they won their first one 2 years before the first of these two back-to-back Super Bowl champions championships. Of course, they would be the dynasty of this era and would go on to win even more Super Bowls after this one. Then at number two on my top five repeat Super Bowl champions, I have the 1978-1979 Pittsburgh Steelers. As I've said, they have won back-to-backs two times, and they're the only team to ever do that. But I ended up going with the 78-79 Steelers as opposed to their first back-to-back Super Bowls, just because I think this team was a little bit more dominant, especially because Terry Bradshaw had really turned into a very well-rounded quarterback up until this point. And, I mean, this 70s Steelers team is literally one of the most legendary, amazing teams of all time. They have so many Hall of Famers from this team. They won so many crazy Super Bowls and won so many crazy games during this era. And starting with in this back-to-back run, Super Bowl 13 against my Dallas Cowboys, they would barely beat them 35-31. It would actually end on this really horrible play for the Dallas Cowboys, where their receiver, he had the ball in the end zone for the game-winning touchdown, and he would end up dropping the pass. That literally hits him right in the chest. It's one of the most heartbreaking plays you'll ever see as a Cowboys fan, for damn sure. But they would end up losing that Super Bowl, and the Steelers would win. Terry Bradshaw would go on to be the MVP of the Super Bowl. He went 17 for 30 for 318 yards and four touchdowns. Then in Super Bowl 14, they played the LA Rams and would absolutely demolish them 31-19. Once again, Terry Bradshaw was the MVP. He went 14 for 21 for 309 yards and two touchdowns. I'd like to point out that, because a lot of people think Terry Bradshaw is overrated, even though he has four Super Bowls, a lot of people like to point to all the great players he had on his team, but that's how you become a great player, is you have, and a winner, is you have great players surrounding you. There is no such thing as a team who only has one great player. As a matter of fact, of all of these back-to-back teams, they all have legendary players. Like I mentioned with the 66-67 Packers, almost every player on that team is in the Hall of Fame, and coaches as well. Of course, I mean, the Super Bowl trophy is named after Vince Lombardi, the coach of that team. So they had a great team. Then the San Francisco 49ers that I mentioned, also a great team. It wasn't just Joe Montana. You had Jerry Rice. You had a great coach. You had a great defense. So, come on. And then same with the New England Patriots of the 2003-2004 New England Patriots. Not only did they have Tom Brady, but they had Deion Branch, who is the MVP in one of those Super Bowls that I just mentioned. And, they had Corey Dillon, and then they also had a great defense with Teddy Bruschi and just some of the most legendary players. And then obviously Bill Belichick, one of the greatest coaches of all time. So the fact that people call Terry Bradshaw overrated is just amazing to me, because he's got four Super Bowls for a reason, and two out of those four Super Bowls, he was the MVP in them. So grow up and get over yourselves if you actually think Terry Bradshaw's overrated, because he's not. He is an amazing football player. And then number one on my top five repeat Super Bowl champions, this should come as no surprise to you, that would be my 1992-1993 Dallas Cowboys. I don't think that when comparing rosters, the only team out of all of these repeat champions that I believe could even compete with the Dallas Cowboys would be the 70s Steelers, because they match up very well at every single position. As a matter of fact, I feel like if they faced off against each other 10 times, that it would split. If the Cowboys of the 90s would win 5 times and the Steelers of the 70s would win 5 times, because that's how amazing I think these two teams are. But this Dallas Cowboys team of the 90s was so fucking dominant. How could I not put them at number one? Plus, this is my show and I'm a Cowboys fan, so I could put the Cowboys at number one any motherfucking time I want. Suck on that, bitches. But the first of these back-to-back Super Bowls was in Super Bowl 27 versus the Buffalo Bills. The Cowboys would absolutely demolish the Bills 52-17. The MVP was my favorite football player of all time, Troy Aikman. He went 22-30 with 273 yards and 4 touchdowns. Then Super Bowl 28 it would be once again against the Buffalo Bills. They would win 30-13. This one was a little bit closer, but the Cowboys would run away with it, especially in the second half. And speaking of running away with it, the MVP was the running back, Emmitt Smith, who had 30 carries for 132 yards and 2 touchdowns, including 2 big, big touchdowns that would ultimately send the Cowboys off into the sunset, winning their second Super Bowl. And they would go on to actually win yet another Super Bowl in Super Bowl 30. So they would end up winning three of 4 Super Bowls in that time period. I also forgot to mention about that 70s Steelers team, that they would end up winning 4 Super Bowls in 6 years. So that's another reason why I put them at number 2. So that's my top 5 repeat Super Bowl champions of all time. And so, yeah, there you go. That's this week's top 5 list. We got a lot of baseball on tap this weekend. Shit is getting real. We're getting a little, it's August, so we are getting closer to playoff time. A bunch of teams, they're going to start making their runs. Even though some teams may be cold right now, there are teams that are going to get hot in the month of August, and they are going to make a run for it, and who knows what's going to happen. But we got that on tap this weekend. We've got more training camps. I mean, shit, it was fucking awesome to finally get some football last night. You know, football season's preseason kicked off last night with the Raiders versus the Jaguars. And even though it was just a Hall of Fame game, which usually just showcases all the nobodies, it was still great to watch some football last night. And now that just kicks off. Even though it's preseason, we got football right around the corner. So we'll see what happens with football and baseball this weekend. And I will talk to you guys on Monday.